This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. And may I start by offering an apology? I wasn't able to produce an episode last week because I came down with probably the most egregious disease that any podcaster can get, and that is tonsillitis. So of course I lost my voice and just wasn't feeling up to the task at all. The show must go on, but you do have to be fit and ready to do the show as well. Thankfully I'm recovered now, and I hope to give you a very useful and memorable and practical episode today. So what will we be exploring today? Well, I'm going to go through some rookie mistakes, some blunders that newly qualified high school teachers often make, and trainee teachers who are teaching middle and high school often make. And by the way, all of the mistakes I'm going to go through today are mistakes that I have made in the past and that I have witnessed others make as well. And the good news on top of that as well is that they are all very easy to fix. So let's go through them. The first mistake that I see trainee high school teachers making is not getting the marking balance correct. So that means overmarking. And also the flip side to that, undermarking. The biggest issue I seem to see, and the one that I fell prey to as a trainee teacher, was overmarking. And I want to stress that whilst you do need to mark your students' work, you do not need to mark everything by hand, and you do not need to write lengthy comments on every single piece of work that the students give you. You will quickly find that you are burning yourself out if you try that. I remember as a newly qualified high school science teacher almost 15 years ago now, and I remember it was the Easter vacation, just like it is now as I record this podcast episode. And instead of looking forward to a 2-week holiday from school, I remember filling a sports bag, a really big gym bag, with books and papers and assignments to take home to mark over the 2 weeks. How many of us have done that in our past? Taken home piles and piles of marking that we somehow think we're going to do during our holidays. I must stress, our holidays are our holidays. As teachers, we need our downtime, and we should not be taking home ridiculous levels of marking and admin and paperwork to do during our holidays. A little bit is okay. I've brought a little bit home with me this Easter vacation. Nothing too big, something I can easily handle in an hour or two. But back in the early days, I was marking everything by hand. Homework, classwork, coursework, just absolutely everything the students did. Because I was very keen, I wanted to impress. And back in those days as well, there was the whole assessment for learning strategies and theory was becoming very popular. We were basically told as new teachers that comments on student work that are lengthy and specific are much better than saying very good or well done or excellent work. Now, that is true. I don't disagree with that. However, there are much more efficient methods that we have at our disposal as teachers for providing feedback than just writing comments all over every piece of work. So, for example, peer assessment, where we have conversations with our students after the peer assessment has taken place, verbal feedback, live marking. Many of you will have heard me talk about on this channel before, automated assessment. A lot of work can be marked online now on platforms like Google Classroom, for example. So utilize a wide variety of marking strategies. Do not feel as a trainee teacher that you have to take everything home or spend hours and hours every evening after school marking student work by hand. What I will say as well is check with your school, check with your line manager, check with your head of department, whoever's in charge of you, your mentor, if you have a mentor for your first year of teaching, and talk with them and find out what is the expectation in terms of marking, and make sure that you meet that expectation, but don't feel like you have to go above and beyond that. And I do think sometimes as newly qualified teachers, we're so eager to prove ourselves. And we feel sometimes that we really have to impress the people around us. And it really is not necessary. You do not have to put that much pressure on yourself and overburden yourself with, in the case of marking, pointless work. Because if you're writing lengthy comments on every piece of work that students give you, not only is that extremely time-consuming, it is also not the most efficient way to provide feedback. On the flip side to that, another common problem that trainee teachers face is under-marking as well, not marking student work enough. And I understand where this problem comes from. It was a problem I suffered from when I was doing my PGCE all those years ago. So that was before I even started teaching full time. And essentially, it was because I felt so overwhelmed by all of the planning I was doing, by the lesson observation meetings I was having, by the assignments I had to submit to university. And I kind of put marking student work on the back burner. I kept it as the last priority. And that's a dangerous and foolish thing to do, because marking student work is important. As I said, we don't have to write lengthy comments on every single piece of work, but the feedback does need to be there in some form. So do make sure that you are providing feedback on student work, particularly if it's high stakes work like unit tests, homeworks, coursework, anything that's substantial. Make sure that feedback is happening. Keep a record of what you've done as well. Your mentor may ask you, your head of department may ask you about the marking you're doing. Maybe keep a little journal for yourself and write down what kind of things you're doing. Not only will that provide you with really good discussion points that you can raise with your line manager, but also that will help you develop as a professional as well. If you're journaling the techniques you're using and particularly the marking and assessment techniques you're using, that will only serve to make you better and more proficient. Now, the second thing, which is a big problem that particularly younger, newly qualified teachers deal with, is trying to be friends with the students. Now, this is, of course, completely inappropriate and unprofessional, but it is an easy mistake to make, and it's an easy trap to fall into for those younger, newly qualified teachers, and sometimes the older ones as well. I remember when I was a trainee teacher, and many of the children I was teaching in the sixth form, for my American and international colleagues, that means just before they go to university. And these students were 18 and 17 years old. And here I am coming into the classroom teaching them, and I'm 22. So I was only 3 or 4 years older than the kids I was teaching. So very close in age. And sometimes when you're in that situation, you can feel like you have to be friends with the students. You might call students mate, for example, or bro, or something familiar like this. Now, this is a big mistake to make, because whether you are 22, fresh-faced in the classroom, or you're a more mature trainee teacher, you are still an authority figure in that classroom. And unfortunately, there's a concept which used to be taught all the time on teacher training courses, which you very rarely hear about these days, and that's the concept of professional distance. Once again, that's professional distance. There needs to be professional distance between you as the teacher and your students, and they need to see you as someone who's in that classroom, yes, to help them, yes, to impart knowledge, but also you're not their friend. You are their teacher. That's a completely different dynamic. It's a completely different relationship. So you have to have that mindset walking in, no matter how experienced you are, actually, that you are the student's mentor, guide, teacher, and you are an authority figure in the classroom. Now, that doesn't mean you need to start being autocratic all of a sudden, barking orders and thinking that you're all high and mighty. That will cause problems as well. But you do need to be aware that whilst you might be very close in age to these learners, or you may not be very experienced, or you might have your own novel ideas and you're really keen and full of energy, those students are still learners in that classroom who depend upon you for guidance, not just knowledge and skills, but also for moral and ethical guidance as well. And you can only be, I think, a moral, ethical guide in the classroom if there is that professional distance that's in place. So do be careful with that one. Problems tend to arise, and sorry if this is a little uncomfortable, but it needs to be raised, when it comes to romantic relationships. Of course, it is always, and I do want to reiterate this point, it is always inappropriate for a teacher to be in a romantic relationship with a student. That goes without saying. But sometimes problems do arise when you've got teachers or trainee teachers in a classroom with students who are very close in age to them. And sometimes that teacher thinks, oh, you know, they're going to leave school soon. I'm only 22. Maybe I should try flirting with this student, or trying something with that student that's a romantic endeavor. Needless to say, that could be a career-ending move. That could totally destroy your career as a teacher. So don't even dream about doing something like that. And I did say at the beginning of this podcast episode that I've made all of these mistakes that I'm telling you. Thankfully, I've not made that one. I was never stupid enough, thankfully, and I have been very stupid in the past, but I was never stupid enough to make that mistake of trying to be romantically involved with a student. Never, ever even go there. There has to be that professional distance at all times. So I do hope that point is very, very clear. Number three, the third one, not consulting with colleagues or line managers. I think oftentimes as trainee teachers, we think that we have to, like I said before, we have to prove ourselves somehow, or we can feel like we're expected to know everything. What I can tell you is you are not expected to know everything. If anything, as a trainee teacher, you will be given the benefit of the doubt. Allowances will be made for you because you are so new to the profession, and you are expected not to know everything. So there is no question silly enough, there is no question stupid enough that you can ask your head of department or line manager or mentor or another senior teacher about. Anything that comes up, whether it's what do I teach this class next, what assessment is coming up, if you've had a meeting, one thing, this still happens to me today, you might be in a meeting with your department and someone might say something really important, the next day you might forget about it. And you can feel like, oh no, I should have listened more carefully in the meeting. Don't worry, don't panic. Find out what it was. Talk to your head of department. It is much better to ask 3, 4, 5 times and be clear about something than to pretend that you know what's going on when you don't and then make a mistake. I remember being a relatively new teacher to the profession. I was about 5 years into the job, and I went and asked my head of department, my head of science, about something very simple. I can't even remember what it was. It might have been which topic do I teach next or something. And I was a little bit reluctant at first because I thought, oh, he's going to think I'm stupid. He's going to think I'm not on the ball. I'm not alert. I'm not planning properly. You've got to let go of all that negativity, all those negative thoughts you have to let go of. Talk to your line manager. And I went in there and I asked him the question and he told me the answer. And he said, by the way, Richard, and I'll never forget this, everybody. He said, thank you for asking me, because if you didn't ask me, a mistake would be made and then we've got to fix things. So thank you so much, Richard. I wish that everybody would do what you did and come and ask me. So you might be surprised, everybody, when you ask your line manager, you ask your head of department something, don't be afraid. Don't think like you should know it and it's going to sound stupid. There is no question too stupid that you can ask, okay? And in my experience, every head of department and line manager will be more than happy to clarify things for you. And if you're working with someone who isn't happy to do that and who isn't happy to help you, then I would suggest that you're working with the wrong team and you need to look at that situation you're in very carefully and think about either moving on or having a discussion with that person about their role in the school. But thankfully, I've never been in that situation where a line manager or a head of department has not wanted to help if I've asked. So do please consult with colleagues, consult with line managers when you are in doubt. Number four, another big mistake I see trainee teachers making. I have fallen embarrassingly into this trap from time to time, not very often, I'm happy to say, but from time to time, especially when I was a young, newly qualified teacher, and that is engaging in gossip or inappropriate staff room talk. Now, what on earth am I talking about when I say inappropriate staff room talk and gossip? Well, you'll often find when you work at different schools that there are friendship groups within schools, within staff bodies, and there's drama that happens sometimes, there's politics that happens from time to time, and you may hear and witness some of your colleagues gossiping about things or you know, dishing out the latest juicy information about something. Now, it is incredibly important in that situation that you do not join in, even if you're asked to. And the reason is because gossip always plants the seeds of distrust in your colleagues' minds. And if you start gossiping about someone, all your colleagues are going to secretly think about behind your back, oh, I can't trust him or I can't trust her because they will just gossip about me behind my back. So you've really got to be careful about this, and particularly when you're younger, because it's something that is very appealing, it's very entertaining, but you must not fall into it. You have to maintain not only professional distance with your students, but there also needs to be some professional distance with your colleagues as well. And gossip is one such example of that. When I was very young, I used to my embarrassment, get involved in little dramas and gossips in the staff room. Not when I was a teacher so much, I have to say, but during my summer job at a factory in North Wales, a cosmetics factory, there was this gossip going on in the staff canteen. I got involved. I wish I hadn't. And the person we were gossiping about found out. And she just walked up to me and said, "You're so two-faced, Richard." Now, that was back when I was 18, 19. So I was a kid at the time. But it was a good lesson for me. You know, it was a lesson that you should not engage in gossip. It doesn't help you. And it's it builds distrust. It builds distrust between people. One story I can remember is I was a trainee teacher at a school in North Wales, and an argument had happened between two colleagues in the staff room. It was over some cover lesson or something, and one staff member told the other staff member in front of everyone to F off, literally to F off. And you know, a small altercation ensued. And then after that, there was a bit of drama. The next day, a different group of people were talking about that situation. And one member of that group asked me, "Richard, what do you think about the whole thing?" Now, I'm there as a 22-year-old trainee teacher, fresh out of university, you know. I'm still a kid myself, really. And I'm being asked about what I thought about it. And my response was, I'm not getting involved. I don't have an opinion. And my head of science was there. He was a witness to this. And he said, "That's the best decision, Richard. Yeah, that's the best thing to do." And I remember that because I felt good about it afterwards. I felt good that I had not given my two cents worth, and I hadn't chipped in, and I just said, "I'm not getting involved. It's not my issue to deal with." That is often the best response. Do not engage in gossip. Now, I did also mention inappropriate staff room talk. Now, particularly when we are younger, we often misunderstand what we should be telling our colleagues about ourselves. And you do have to be careful about this, because just because you work with a group of people, it doesn't mean that they are your friends. And the people you work with, and this is going to sound ultra negative, and this is a button pusher for a lot of people, because I get a lot of kickback about this. And I mentioned this in my award-winning book as well, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. And that is, you've really got to be careful with your colleagues. They are well capable of reporting you to senior management. They are capable of gossiping about you. They are capable of reporting you, filing a grievance form, filling in a complaint about you. They are all of your colleagues are capable of doing that. And you really have to remember that at all times. And that means that you've got to be careful what you tell people about yourself. If you're going through a divorce, for example, is that really something you should be talking about at school? I don't think so. That's a personal matter. Keep it personal. The only thing or the only things that your colleagues should be hearing about with regards to your life are positive things. I just completed my master's degree, for example. I just got this certificate, for example. I taught this really great class, for example. Those are the only things that your colleagues should ever be hearing about you are positive professional things. Any personal pain, personal trauma, personal dramas that are affecting you, I'm sorry, but should be kept private. That is not stuff that should be discussed at the workplace. Because you could end up in a situation where someone's concerned about you, and that escalates into something. Now, what am I talking about? Well, there was this colleague of mine many years ago who was from America. She came to the UK and she wasn't very clear about how to mark and assess student work. And she'd fallen behind on her marking. Now, nobody knew that she'd fallen behind on her marking, but she decided to tell everyone. She decided to, in the staff room, oh, you know, I've got so much marking to do, I'm so behind. And she was kind of giggling and laughing about it, and a few of her colleagues were giggling along. But what I don't think she realized was that some of the people who heard that were managers within the school, were people who had a vested interest in making sure teachers were doing their job properly. And it ended up that her line manager had a discussion with her and she was put on a coping strategy and she was monitored so that she got that marking done. And it was a very stressful ordeal for her. It was very embarrassing for her. And this is going to sound a bit controversial, but if she'd have just kept her mouth shut and done the marking, got it out the way, no one would have been any the wiser. Now, the flip side to that, of course, is if you are struggling with something genuinely at school and you are falling behind and you are overwhelmed, okay, of course you should speak up, of course you should seek help, and your colleagues and your line managers will be more than happy to help you. But if it is something trivial, and it's something that you can handle, then you don't need to be complaining about every little thing to your colleagues, because you never know how far that information is going to travel and how much it's going to escalate. So do be careful, and also be careful about what you reveal about your personal life as well. There's a very famous saying, I don't know who came up with this, but it's one that I live by and I think it's great. And it is, you should never tell your colleagues or anyone about three things. And those three things are your salary, your love life, and your next move. Now, I happen to think that's pretty good advice. No one needs to know about your love life, so obviously keep that private. Your salary. Not everyone at your school might be receiving the same salary, so keep that stuff private. Your salary, the money you get, nobody needs to know that, so keep that private. Your next move, this is interesting. You know, if you've got plans, if you're doing something, obviously, if it's a school-related thing, yeah, keep people in the loop about that. But if it's a personal thing, you don't need to be revealing all your personal information to people, at work especially. Another thing that comes up are medical things. Again, if you have a medical condition, if you have a disease, or you suffer from multiple diseases, or you get sick very often, you don't need to be discussing that with your colleagues. You don't need to be passing that information on, unless it's a formal situation where you're required to submit a medical certificate. But only, I would suggest, only pass on medical information to your employer, which is your school, if you're required to, if it's in your contract, if you have to. But you don't need to be sat in the staff room discussing all the aches and pains you have, or the ailments you have, or things like that, because, you know, people are going to get concerned about you. Colleagues can be very judgmental. As teachers, we are held to a very high standard, not just by society in general, but also by our colleagues. And you would be surprised the kind of thoughts that go on in our colleagues' heads about each other. Maybe you as a teacher have had some negative thoughts about your colleagues and whether or not they are fit to teach, whether they should be in the classroom. We are, as teachers, expected to be highly professional. So if it's not essential information that people need to know, I would suggest, with the greatest of respect, keep that to yourself. Okay, the final big mistake that trainee teachers in the secondary school often make is not taking a long-term view, and by extrapolation, not keeping to the long-term schedule. Now, this is an easy trap to fall into. As trainee teachers, we often find ourselves overwhelmed with things. We're not very experienced, and we can often take a short-term view of the lesson planning process. Often as trainee teachers, we're planning week by week or even day by day. But it's very important from the early stages of being a teacher that you have that long-term view, that you're looking at which topics I need to cover this half term. When do I need to have finished this topic? When do I need to have started the next topic? Which topics must I have covered this academic year? It's very crucial we do that, because particularly with exam level classes, students who are doing external exams, internal exams, we really need to have covered everything, of course, before they go into those exams. So keep to the schedule, make sure you know what the schedule is, take that long-term view, and again, if you're not sure about where those milestones are and when you need to have finished topics, go and ask your line manager, ask your head of department, ask someone who will know, ask another colleague if you have to. Again, there is no question too stupid. Ask a colleague, ask people, ask many times if you have to. Even today, as a teacher with nearly 20 years of experience under my belt, I still ask rudimentary questions of my colleagues. Just recently, I was asking my colleagues in the maths department, which topic are you up to? Where should we be right now? What should we cover after the Easter vacation? You know, we all have to calibrate ourselves as educators. So please, especially if you're a trainee teacher, make sure you're taking that long-term view, you're looking ahead, and you're thinking about where you need to be at which particular points in time. What are the milestones for your course? When are the students doing their assessments? Which topics must they have covered by the time they do those assessments? Are there any coursework requirements that need to be fulfilled? Are there any school events which are going to come up and disrupt the flow of your lessons? Is there any homework you need to give students to help them prepare for their next topic? These kind of long-term considerations are big things that even experienced teachers overlook sometimes. So definitely bear those in mind. Well, everybody, I do hope this has been a useful podcast episode. I, as a podcast creator, I'm still trying to understand how to make my voice as clear as possible, how to make the pace as appropriate as possible. So I do hope that this episode wasn't too slow and also wasn't too fast. If you have any recommendations for me about how to improve these episodes or any topic requests, you can email me at info, that's I-N-F-O, at richardjamesrogers.com. One more time, that's info at richardjamesrogers.com. And if you'd like to check out a great blog for teachers, which I've been writing since 2015, which is filled with hundreds of useful articles for teachers, then check that out. It's over at richardjamesrogers.com. One more time, that's richardjamesrogers.com. And if you're interested in an award-winning, brilliant book for high school teachers that covers the fundamentals of classroom management, perfect for trainee teachers, by the way, then why not check out my book, which is called The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. One more time, that's The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. And that book is available everywhere, even in Walmart, can you believe? Blackwell's, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, everywhere. Just search that on Google. I will also put the link to the Amazon page for that book in the episode description. So thank you, everybody. Until next time, bye-bye for now.